from Land Grant Brewing Company, Columbus, Ohio.
So dank.
Right in front, dude.
Just make sure to get a bunch of spittle, like all over the mic.
Yeah, I'm good at that.
Oh, that's good.
Did you like that? Were you recording that one?
Yeah.
Land Grant Brewing presents Land Grant University Beers with the Brewers.
Got our intro.
Did I mention this was Dan?
And I'm Mark Richards, and we also have joining us today Walt Keys.
Boy, Dan's sure fired up today.
And Chris Halderman. I'll tell you what, Dan's really fired up to talk hops, and I don't blame him. I'm a hop lover. Drinking a Greenskeeper right now.
Oh, wow.
What about you, Wally?
I went for the pub ale today.
Went for the beer with no hops.
The hoppiest beer we got.
That's an unusual choice for a hoppy episode.
I actually went for the stiff
balanced.
If I'm being real, and I'm not lying, I'm having a stiff arm.
Been a red can guy lately, I've been noticing.
Red means go.
But you, Dan, what are you drinking today?
This would be Land Dog, code name Pina Pants.
Speaking of hops.
Boom.
Good. Beer. Walt, after you're done sucking your hops through your nose over there, got anything going on down here at the tap room this week?
Oh boy, Mark. Social media calendar is packed this week.
It's blowing up.
Too many things going on to talk about. One of them's tonight, which means it will be over by the time this podcast comes out. But I'm mentioning it anyway because we're doing it again next Wednesday. But we got a movie showing tonight. We're showing Shaun of the Dead. So if you didn't come, sorry. But you got another chance to come watch a spooky, scary movie with us next weekend. Sorry, next week on Wednesday. We're showing Get Out out there in the beer garden. So bring a blanket, cozy up, and watch a Halloween movie with us.
You going to be out there, Walt?
I like that movie quite a bit, so yeah, I think so.
Bring a large blanket.
Yeah. And that this Halloween movie series is all leading up to our big
speaking of creepy
party in the Fear Garden, which is going down next Saturday, the 27th. Sort of an all-day Halloween extravaganza. We're partnering up with BarkBox during the day for a sort of a dog-themed Halloween party, complete with dog costumes and dog costume contests and all that fun stuff. It's also, it marks the day that the official, quote, pups on the patios law goes into effect. So dogs will officially, legally, be allowed here on the patio and in the beer garden, which is exciting. So we're celebrating with BarkBox.
Legalization, finally.
Yeah. So after the dog party sort of ends and the night falls, we're shifting from canines to humans and throwing a more traditional Halloween party. Got some DJs coming to play. Got some great categories here that Kayla and Amber have put together for costume contests. We've got classic creepiest. So I think that's just sort of your classic Dracula, Frankenstein, mummy, ghost type costumes.
What about Chucky? Was that
What about Chucky, Jason?
I think
Leatherface.
Those are all from your generation. They're considered classic these days.
Fair enough.
Creative couple, not to be confused with the popular creepiest couple. You know, if you got a good couple themed costume, you could win that. So
you guys win. I don't know. We weren't even trying.
You could go. Q and Kristen went as the guys from Monsters Inc. last year. That was pretty good. That's tough to top.
Yeah,
Mike and Sully.
Elaborate.
Mike and Sully. You could go as. Some other ones, you know.
Chicken Mark
and the other Gang Beast crew. Mary Poppins and Bert, very popular this Halloween with the remake coming out in like 2 years. So that's pretty exciting. And then we have Absolutely Authentic. I assume that's just like whoever does the best job making a costume. And then we've got the Perfect Posse. I guess that's like a big group. Like, yeah, if you go dressed as like the temples, the hidden temple people, that's popular.
What if we dress all like a bunch of different colors of loofahs? Is that gonna win, you think?
Yeah, that'd be great. You should do that. I know Adam,
it's out there.
When Adam was living in Chicago, he and a bunch of friends all went dressed as different pieces from Tetris.
That's kind of
fun. That's not a bad idea.
So like there's a free idea out there. You can steal it from Adam.
Probably get hung up on a lot of door corners, though.
Yeah.
Unless you're the cube.
And then what do you do if you find your perfect fit? out at the party, like someone else dresses like that, and you know, we fit together. Then you could become the creative couple.
There you go.
You could win it all.
Wow.
So those are the four main categories. There are some fun surprise categories as well, but we'll leave those for the party. So get on down here and do that. It'll be fun. Yeah, and we also have music going on Thursday night, which would be tonight if you're listening the day this comes out. We've got a music series going down with the WS Collective. They are a local jazz band here. Should be pretty solid. And then on Sunday, not only do we have the Devil Doves playing, who are a great sort of folk band, we also are hosting the Save the Crew one-year anniversary watch party. So,
and they actually got saved.
The crew have been saved. And a really great thing for the city, as well as the passionate supporters of the Columbus Crew SC here in town. We're certainly very excited here that someone was able to make it happen and keep the team here. But we are hosting the Save the Crew here Sunday to watch the match at 2. I think the match is at 3, but the party starts at 2. We got a big outdoor screen that we've rented so we can show it during the daytime. They're playing Orlando City, I believe, and it's going to be a raucous affair. Let's come out, drink some beer, hang with all the crew supporters, and cheer on our hometown Columbus Crew SC. That's Sunday, and that's all I got for now.
Cool. Well, hey, we're not really drinking a specific any one beer to pair with chili and or tacos this week, but I will have to say Walt did some research over the weekend down at the tailgates before the OSU-Minnesota game.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, this chili looked amazing. Probably would go with any beer, although at that time I think it was going with the Batch 300.
Yeah, yeah. It was pre-football game, so I was drinking a Batch 300.
So we had a two-meat, mixed bean, spicy-ass chili.
Oh, boy.
With Doritos and a
giant piece of giant barbecue chicken
drumstick sticking out of it.
Yeah.
It was pretty inventive.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to our HR partners, OPOC, for hosting us at their tailgate. They get their catering there done by Smoked on High.
Smoked on High. And if Walt could bastardize their chili, he will give it a shot.
Yeah. Another great barbecue option here in town. Love Ray Ray's. Love Smoked on High.
I'll tell you what, Smoked on High guys were pretty excited about that Wagyu beef brisket that Ray Ray's had. It was off chain, too. Really good.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That's culinary corner there.
Yo. Got that knocked out. Let's talk hops, fellas. What's shaking over there?
Oh, shake. Because, you know, hops, shake.
Is that a thing?
I don't know.
I don't think it's a thing.
Well, yeah. I think we were just going to sort of recap our hops LGU session that we did, sort of an abbreviated version of that.
Yeah, we're going to go really briefly through the history because it's really boring.
What?
Yeah,
That boring.
It's pretty boring.
To not to the folks that are listening to the Beers with the Brewers podcast.
Basically, we can thank the 1200s. That's when hops actually started being used in beer a decent amount. Before, beer was spiced with groot, various spices.
Like mugwort and... roots and bits.
Yeah.
All the roots and bits.
A lot of times you didn't even know what was in it. You just went to your local church and they gave you or you purchased a certain amount of groot spices that you were allotted and you had to put those in your beer. And at that time the church was the government and so the government was forcing you to use it.
Sounds refreshing though.
But yeah, so hops started, people started using hops mainly to get away from the government / church meddling in their affairs so much. Let's see, Holland, 1400 was when they started importing hopped beer to other places, mainly England and other European cities. In 1860, that's when we started doing hop farming in Oregon. And in 1934, the USDA starts their hop breeding program. And so that's really where American hops get started. And the large amount of craziness that we all have now in, you know, beers like Codename Pina Pants, all the IPAs, the double IPAs, the triple IPAs, that all kind of started from the USDA program in 1934. In 1971, that was Cascade. Boom, that's when Cascade was released. And in 1972, that's when it was named Cascade. Before it was USDA 56013.
That's sexy.
Wow.
And you can still find some fun code names or running around like Mosaic. I forget what it is, but it's HBC XXX. Some, you know,
it was a four or something.
And then as far as like the actual first IPA and everything, 1976 was Liberty Ale. Was the first beer using Olin Cascade that was widely available for the American Bicentennial. 1980, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. 1990, Centennial Hops. The first double IPA by Blind Pig Brewery was done in 1994. 2000, Pliny the Elder was brewed. 2003, the continuously hopped Dogfish Head 60 Minute. 2003 again was Heady Topper, and 2007, just one of the other hops we all use today, Citra was released. And then starting in 2016, we got this crazy hazy IPA thing really catching on. So that's kind of a brief summary of where we went from for hops in the U.S. Like America always does, we go a little bigger than everyone else. And so we decided, boom, we need these giant IPAs. We want bigger flavors, more flavors. And so that's where we get away from the noble hops. And now Australia and New Zealand are going absolute bonkers with their stuff. They don't have a whole lot of hop land they can use. So what they are doing with their hop land is making completely bonkers flavor and aroma hops. So
we'll I've heard that it's hard for even the locals to get it anymore. They can't use their own hops because they're too damn expensive.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. They're really damn expensive for us.
Yeah, we are enjoying some of them in this Landog with some Vic Secret, which is a most excellent, excellent hop. In terms of growing regions, you'll find the major hop growing areas between the 35th and the 55th parallels. So think Oregon, Washington, Britain, although they have decreased as sort of a hop growing power in the last couple of decades, really. But then in the southern hemisphere, you've got Australia, New Zealand, South African hops were sort of like the next cool thing until the hop breeding program there was under SAB, which was bought out, so now we can't get those anymore. But they're cool hops, and
kind of a fun fact about the South African hops: they actually don't have a long enough growing season / growing days there for part of it. So they actually have grow lights out in the fields to get the amount of sunshine that they need.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's still how it was, but originally when they started breeding during the embargo because they couldn't actually get hops, they started doing all that.
Oh,
but I'm not going to say that's 100% true, but I did hear it in brew school, so I'm going to say it's 75.
That is a big thing with growing hops, and it's why those 35th and 55th parallels are so important, is that if the day is not long enough, you're not going to get enough growth out of the vines, but if it's too short, then you need to optimize it between growth of the plant and maturation of the hop cone. And that's why those particular bands, north and south, are so so important. But the U.S. Is the world leader now in hop production, both in terms of amount produced and acreage, at 42%. Although, yeah, that was 2015. I'm not sure where it is now, but yeah. Still number one. Germany second with 36%. In Asia, you do get a very small amount of hops that is grown mostly for the Chinese beer industry. I forget that there's one variety, basically, that they use in all of their beers, and I can't think of the name of it. But there's also Sriracha Ace in Japan. And, yeah, as we talked about, in the Southern Hemisphere, increasingly those hops are being sought after for big, juicy IPAs. We're not doing a fresh hop beer this year. Do we want to talk about fresh hops?
I think we should talk about fresh hops. I mean, we had to kind of cut it from production this year just based on not wanting to hold a tank. Just couldn't sit around waiting for those to be harvested this year.
So for those that might not know, why we would have to hold a tank or wait for harvest or whatever. You guys want to explain that as well?
Yeah. So the hops, they come fresh picked and they're wet. They have not been dried and processed like normal hops. Because of their moisture content, they are very fragile and they're very fresh, and it's very, when you drink beers, made with those hops, you get like a very zesty, juicy, kind of like a, almost like an aloe, a very succulent type of flavor, but, they have to be shipped, and generally you want to use them within 24 to 48 hours of them being picked. So, like we were saying, we would have to hold basically a tank open, and because of the way our brew house is set up, we could really only do 20 barrels at a time, and it's an extended brew day for us. But yeah, hopefully it'd be really nice if we could have those shipped close to us. We've done some great things with Michigan Hops. Michigan Hop Alliance has some really interesting varieties, and also increasingly with our friends at Ohio Hops. That'd be really cool if we could do something in the next couple of years. But... yeah, in the meantime, Fatheads always does a very stellar fresh hot beer. Our buddies over at CBC, Yakima Fresh.
Also good.
I was looking it up. Hedora is the looks to be like the primary Chinese hop.
Yeah.
Hedora. Maybe we should bring back Ghidorah.
Whoa.
You're welcome for that.
Yes. Yeah, but we are thinking about, we will be doing fresh hop beer next year, like everyone's kind of saying, and we are going to get it from at least the Midwest to try and bring everything back local as much as we can and get the highest quality ingredients we can, but try and keep them as local as we can as well. We are all kind of sad not to do that beer. It is a ton of work, but we all think it's worth it for that one time a year. So hopefully it all works out and we can do it next year.
Yeah. And I also mentioned that you are using an order of like 2 to 3 times the amount of fresh hops that you do dried and pelletized. And think of the difference between like raisins and grapes. That's what you're looking at. So it's quite an endeavor, but it'd be really cool if we could do it again.
For it.
Mm-hmm.
What else we got?
Just to touch briefly on hop breeding, it's just sort of to explain, like, oh, you know, why don't we have new varieties coming out every year? It's like, well, it's basically a 10-year process to cross hops and select them. And also because there's still the perception of something wrong with genetically modified organisms. Everything is crossed naturally, and so you have to wait for that process to sort of bear itself out. And everything starts with disease resistance. Most of the hops that are in existence today started because they were resistant to downy mildew, and then once you get past that process, you can start looking at the actual quality of the hop and what the flavor and aroma is like. But because of all of that, it's a very extensive process. And yeah, but also mentioning that, also tying into hop growing regions, you can take something like a Saaz hop and grow it in a different region of the world, and it could have a completely different character than where it came from.
Terroir.
Thank you. Yeah, very much like summer that we use in pool party, right?
Every once in a while I'll pull out a nice term.
Nailed the pronunciation as well.
Very true. Now, it's very akin to wine when people are like, this is definitely a Bordeaux from the actual Bordeaux region. Maybe even they can tell you which area of that or, you know, various other wines. Or I can tell you this is a cab from, you know, Oregon or California or France or wherever. Mm. They all have different flavors you get out of them, and hops are the exact same way, depending on what kind of stresses they typically have year over year and the type of soil they're in. And I'm not saying I know. I have no idea what an Oregon Cascade would taste like versus a Utah or a Washington Cascade. But I do know they're different, and possibly what you consider as Cascade, you know, citrus, you know, maybe orange, lemon. You may not get that from one that was, you know, in New York or something.
They actually did the one of my favorite blogs, the Hop Chronicles on Brewlosophy. They did a Washington Cascade, I think it was, but it was just bonkers tropical. And that's another problem with that is, unfortunately, when you start growing hops, you're not going to see mature flowers until, you know, 3 years at a minimum. So if there is, you know, everyone grows Cascade because it's disease resistant, it's ubiquitous. But if you are going to get those, you know, major terroir differences, you're not going to see it for 3 to 5 years. So I'm hoping, our Ohio Cascades that are out there will turn into something unique and cool.
Cascades, real easy to grow. I had some in my backyard for years. You guys growing hops in your backyard? And we got a few varieties out here in the beer garden right now.
I have not as of yet.
I choose not to because I have a dog. Mm-hmm. And hops are poisonous to dogs. If you guys didn't know that, there you go. A little PSA. Uh-huh. So I choose not to grow them because my dog, she
didn't know
anything.
That.
I'm going to try to get a trellis on the side of my garage next year. But, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, 3 years is truly the magic number, too.
Is that when you started getting a real good harvest in, Mark?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I brewed with mine a few times, and they were... I don't know. I dried them on a fan a couple times, and then also, as Dan said, did a wet hop addition.
That's great.
On a home brew, yeah. But Cascade's pretty easy to grow in Ohio.
We got one variety out there right now that's really came in really nicely.
I think Nugget.
I mean, I don't know what that tastes like.
Wasn't
like,
Nugget the
really
one
nice
that
cones
brought on cones out there?
I think so.
For some extremely late planted above the frost line.
And we are certainly not farmers by any means around
right,
here.
Right.
I think every plant that's been gifted to the tap room has died.
Thanks, Walt.
So we water it with
some
beer and Gatorade, the electrolytes.
It has what plants crave.
Yeah.
Oh, but another thing about growing your own hops is you have to buy rhizomes. That being plants that are already growing. They really keep the male plants under lock and key. Nobody yep. really has access to those except for the actual hop growers and the hop breeders. You can't go out and buy a bunch of hop seeds or something like that.
It's the rhizomes are the root cuttings. So hop plants are annual, and that's how they propagate. They will go out and cross the roots and cross-pollinate. But anyway.
You can just go to like old Oakland Park and buy like some starter plants. That's
Oakland,
what we did. Mm-hmm.
Oakland Nursery had some this year. And sometimes homebrew supply stores will have them. You can also get them shipped to you. I think they're pretty resilient when they're out of the ground. Like they could last a couple days out of the ground. You'd have no problem with success putting them back in.
Much like ours did, because we brought them back here and we didn't plant them for like a week.
So the T90 pellets that you've ever seen, if you've homebrewed, that is our bread and butter. It's what we basically use in everything.
Looks like hamster food.
Yeah. That's what we're set up for in terms of whole cone and fresh hops. We have to make adjustments to our brewing process in order to use those. We've played around more with stuff like cryo pellets, which is sort of an ultra concentrated version of those T90 pellets. It's really cool and something I'd like to do more of in the future. We had some of those in concentrate. There's also things that mostly the big boys use in terms of trying to improve their efficiency, like extract, which is it's like tar. It's a hop tar, basically. Dear God, it's awful to work with. It sticks to everything. And if you're dumb enough to put it directly on your tongue, is the bitterest substance known to man. So
it will almost make your tongue go numb.
I assume you guys have done that, both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might as well.
It's also really good just to sort of rub it on the inside of a glass and give someone a beer.
Also, yes.
I've never done that.
Nor have I. I've just heard stories.
Yeah. Sure.
But yeah, and then there's other very sort of refined products, stuff for foam retention. You can use oils sort of post-fermentation, but that's not stuff we've played with yet anyway. Anatomy, meh. If you want to know what a hop looks like, get a whole hop and look at it.
Boom. You heard it straight from Dan.
Yeah. Lift the leaves up, lift the skirt up of the little thing, and the little green jobbers are lupulin glands. And
painting quite a picture here. Go to your computer, go to Google, click the images button.
Images.
Type in hops.
Hops.
And then yeah, you'll get something.
Could we do like just all of the podcasts that way? Yeah, if you go to Google.
So here's what we know about hops. We go to Google and we type in hops and then we click on the Wikipedia link that's the top one. And that's
what we're reading that's right hops. Now.
If you want to know anything about what we're talking about, Google it. Podcast over. Hmm.
We're going to talk about hops today. Just Google it. It's fine.
Yeah. But if you do want to learn something about hops that we pulled from Google, we've got some of these LGU hops booklets left from our LGU we hops.
Do we?
Not many, but
okay.
If you're down here.
You would like a collector's item.
And you want to make the bartenders look around the storage area for a long time, come down here and ask for one of those booklets.
It's like the secret menu here at Land Grant.
Yeah, but it mostly just involves bartenders having to open every box in the storage area.
Chris, doesn't McDonald's have a secret menu?
I do not know about that.
I don't either.
Oh. No, I
think you're thinking about Outer In Burger, whatever it's called. Outer In Burger.
In-N-Out Burger.
Outer In Burger.
The old Outer In Burger.
I wouldn't recommend eating a burger made at Outer In, but I would recommend hanging out there and having a good time. That's Ohio State Bar.
True.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah.
In-N-Out Burger is, although very
Chris
delicious.
Chris is looking at me with his Purdue hat on, saying, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I don't know these things.
Well, we got a big game this week.
Well, you can have a Dwayne Purvis burger.
I feel like we should be talking more trash to one another with the big game on Saturday.
I don't think it's necessary.
We don't talk trash to Purdue people? Yeah.
Well, no. here's the great thing about being from Purdue.
See how it goes.
Unless you just absolutely blow us out of the water, we win.
Wow.
We're the little guy in the fight.
Yeah.
If it's close, we win. If we win, we really win.
We lose by just going to West Lafayette.
I still have nightmares from Terrell Pryor. No, there'll be no trash talking.
I have great elated memories of rushing the field after we won that game. It was...
That's awesome.
It was amazing.
Oh. For you.
Well, I'm glad you got one.
I'm sure that was a big moment for
in
you.
Your 4 years.
It was, yeah.
Your 4 to 6 years at Purdue, you had one.
It was five, thank you.
Well, yeah, that's an average. I think, yeah,
that would be the average.
Quick math.
I guess that Purdue math's a bit better than that Ohio State math.
Oh, wow. That's trash
talk. And it goes both ways.
That's I could remember talk. Every time Ohio State won a big game.
I went to school for an education, not to watch football.
Yes, you always go to that cop-out.
I went to school for my 2.7 GPA.
That's what I had, too, so I guess we're even there.
Slid on by.
So. Any other hop-related items?
Well, I suppose we talk about why and how we use hops. So, one, alpha acids is what makes hops and beer bitter. They are not very soluble, so we need to boil them or use some weird chemical process to isomerize them and make them more soluble. And the other half of that is hop oils. And generally, or it used to be at least, that alpha acids and hop oils went in tandem. But anymore, you're seeing very high oil content hops with lower alpha acids, and that's a product of people wanting more hop flavor and aroma and less bitterness, and you're going to continue to see that in the future probably.
Yeah, and in the boil, if you add hops at the beginning of the boil, that's where most of your bitterness comes from, and at the end of the boil, you can keep and retain a lot of those hop oils, and that's where you get all your flavor and aroma from. Depending on where you add things in the boil, you can get some different flavors. I've heard, I believe it's Amarillo. If you add it 30 minutes in, you can get some strawberry flavors, stuff like that. Flavors that aren't, those varieties aren't really known for. And that's where, I mean, there's a crazy amount of flavor compounds and aroma compounds in all these hop oils. So, you know, somebody may get some great combination. Oh, if I add it at 23 minutes into my boil, I can get some this great flavor that I can't get anywhere else. And so that's one of the cool things about hops and beer, that it's ever-changing, because you can get the right balance of all these compounds to give you this other amazing flavor that maybe no one else has found before. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's sort of like with the sequel to Concentrate was...
Corsica.
Yeah, with Mosaic, Amarillo, and Centennial. It was basically just straight orange juice, whereas you're not going to get that... You know, Amarillo is orangey, but you're not going to get that type of intense orange juice flavor from any one characteristic of those hops.
Yeah, so we do single hop beers on our pilot system a decent amount, just to kind of showcase those hops. Maybe it's a hop we have never used before, and we'll use it in the boil, towards the middle of the boil, at the end of the boil, and dry hopping, just to see what kind of flavors we can get out of it. But most of our big beers that we do, they're a combination of at least 2, 3, if not 4 different hops that we think will meld really well together. And you can actually change a beer. You can use the same hops in it, but just change the ratios a bit, and you can get a totally different beer. And so that's what we play around with a lot as well.
How about that Vic's Secret? That was a pretty good single hop IPA.
Yeah, that's nice.
It was really...
I would agree. I think that was great.
It was a good one we had for the anniversary party. I loved it.
Yeah. Well, the reason we were looking at using that is people call it Baby Galaxy. Galaxy is going for upwards of $30 a pound now. It's really hard to find.
Latest I saw was $40 a pound. Jeez. Ridiculous.
So, but Vic's Secret is, yeah, you taste it. It's definitely in the same vein as that. It's not... People say pineapple. I wouldn't quite say pineapple. It's more kind of gooseberry, lychee type thing. But, yeah, I really
those are two fruits you eat a lot, Walt. Gooseberries and lychees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fruit salad. Gooseberry, lychee, fruit salad.
True.
There you go.
So I had no comeback for that. I had nothing.
It's great.
One of the cool things we actually got to do this year, and I think if you paid attention to the old InstaFace, you might have seen it. We actually got to do our first hop selection this year.
We haven't posted it yet.
Never mind, that didn't
we're
happen.
We're saving it for rainy day, but I got some good photos of you guys rubbing hops.
Okay, well, pay attention to InstaFace, and you might see it. But yeah, we didn't get a fly out there this year. But hopefully in the coming years we will, and actually get a walk around and pick our lots that way. But they sent us some samples, and we do what they call a hop rub, which is where you take whole cone dried hops and you rub them in between your hands. I don't know, like you're starting a
like
fire
starting
on
a fire.
Castaway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the best
Boy
description.
Scout, camping trip. You got to start a fire without,
it's the,
without
Mr.
matches.
Miyagi.
Yes. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, so you do that, and you get hop oil and lupulin glands all over your hands, and it's great. But you shove your nose in that, and you know, you try and pick out all the flavors you're looking for. And it was kind of shocking to us. On some of them, you'd have 3 different varieties of Simcoe or Cascade or something, and 2 of them would taste or would smell like, yeah, this is Cascade. One would be like totally different. Goes back to like the terroir, I guess, but it was just really eye-opening to have this be our first one and you know, just being able to see the differences. It was kind of crazy.
I can't remember, was it Centennial? Was there was one that was just bonkers complex, but it also had just a little bit of a garlicky thing, and also was not really characteristic of what we would consider Centennial.
Yes.
So even though I considered it the best, we ended up not going with that lot, just because it wasn't what we expect in terms of consistency from Centennial.
Yeah, and that was actually kind of upsetting, because there was a couple of those where I was like, oh, that'd be really interesting. but it's not the hop we need to use in Stiff Arm to make Stiff Arm Stiff Arm.
Right.
And so that's just some of the things we have to think about when selecting these. We could select a crazy, you know, particular lot of Centennial that we think would be awesome, but we have to think about, oh, well, people are expecting a certain flavor, so we actually have to go back to that certain flavor that we're looking for.
I'm really excited for that Simcoe.
Yes, I am as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice to select those. There was quite a bit of variation in them, which was, I would have to agree as well, surprising, just considering there were three lots coming from the same company.
And so that kind of goes to, if you've ever had the same beer over and over, and maybe you get some slightly different, you're like, oh man, that's a hell of a batch of, you know, maybe batch 300. You know, we've done that a few times, and I think it's been great every time, but it's been different every time, just slightly. And you get that from the fact that we get those hops from different lots. And it really came in a drastic effect when we were smelling these. We're like, holy cow, this is why, you know, sometimes you get a real bonkers batch of a beer, and it was amazing. And then other times you're like, well, this is still really good, but man, that batch was crazy good.
Yeah, granted, those lots are generally blends of different lots of hops, but they're also different lots.
Yeah.
And yeah, particularly with Citra, it can be all over the place. I think that they finally got together with growers and told them to leave it on the vine longer. And it gets rid of some of that kind of dank, oniony, garlicky, armpity type of thing. And you get more of that really delicious tropical fruit flavor out of it now. But we did have one crop here that was just not... Eh.
Yeah, I think cat piss is the word.
There you go.
Anyway, which is actually a real descriptor. I'm not just really throwing that out there. But that was a... And it's actually can be quite enjoyable. It sounds weird to say that.
A little
Don't
bit of catty
wrong.
Is nice.
Yeah.
A little insight in the world of Chris over here.
Yeah, but when you're looking for that huge citrus tropical punch, it's not where you want to be.
Maybe cat piss is great for a Purdue fan. I don't know.
Litter box sniffer.
You know, you got to start somewhere.
Whoa, easy there.
Should we get to that question?
Yeah.
Get to that question.
How about it?
We got a question this week via email from our friend Kevin McCabe.
Corsica winner right there.
Yeah.
That's the guy Kevin, who won the golden ticket.
Kevin, we're reading your question here on Beers of the Brewers, so shoot us another email, and we'll get you that T-shirt you earned by submitting a question that was read on this prestigious podcast. All right, here's Kevin's question. If you could only drink one Land-Grant beer and one beer not brewed by Land-Grant for the rest of your life, what would they be? And... Mark and I talked about this. We walked to get lunch today, and we were talking about this question, and we interpreted it as two separate choices. If you had one Land-Grant beer, what would it be? Or if you could pick one beer that wasn't Land-Grant beer, what would it be?
Yeah, I would agree.
Not
yeah.
Two beers.
My preference would be I get to take a Land-Grant beer and a non-Land-Grant beer.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that would be the
preference. I think
we've
got to isolate it down,
too. Yeah.
What if you could only drink one beer for the rest of your life?
And it's a Land-Grant. Yeah. Or if you can only drink one beer for the rest of your life and it's
terrible.
Well, yeah, but the way he asked it, it took a little bit of interpreting.
It's like you get two beers.
Oh, we get to drink
you do,
both
you,
of them?
Julie says...
One's Land-Grant and one's not Land-Grant. What are they?
So producer Julie interprets it as you get two beers, one Land-Grant and one... See that?
Well, tier beers is always better than one.
Well, so I agree, but that totally changes the way you answer the question.
I would agree because I kind of, yeah, if I've got two beers to drink, I got to get a beer for every mood, and I could at least cover two of those moods.
You basically have to know what's your favorite
Julie, don't oversimplify
here's
this
the
extremely
thing.
Complex question.
Does everyone have an answer for both questions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you only had one beer for the rest of your life and it was Land-Grant, go. And then if you only had one beer for the rest of your life and it wasn't Land-Grant, go.
And then
if you had two beers,
yeah. You can do that.
One's Land-Grant, one's not.
So we can cover it all three ways just in case. Yeah. Kevin's dissatisfied with the direction we took on.
We'll cover all bases.
All right. I like this.
I'll start.
Like this.
I'll start. If if I could have one beer and it was a Land Grant beer, it'd be Greenskeeper. Nice, light, refreshing beer. A little bit of hoppiness, but not too much. And if I could have one non-Land Grant beer, I decided I'd go with Pilsner Urquell.
It's a good call.
Easy drinking beer, Pilsner. Because I didn't want to go any too far in one direction. I wanted it to be... Because if it's a lot, you're not drinking anything else for the rest of the time. It better be
something.
It better be something you're not going to get sick of, I guess. I just wanted like a classic Pilsner.
I want to go clockwise. I want to hear what Dan thinks.
Well, did Walt answer all the questions?
I still have to think about the other one because I was thinking about the other one.
Two for the rest of your life.
Okay, we'll go back around.
Come back around.
Come back around on that.
All right,
Dan on the 1-1.
I'm probably influenced by the fact that it just came out, but 300 is tasting really, really good. And
you're a jerk.
I drink a lot of doubles and. Because I am a jerk.
You have a lot of arguments with people.
I was going to pick 300, which is why you're the jerk.
Are you the guy that's like, well, I can't order that now because you ordered it.
No, I'm still going to say it. It just makes me look
like
an asshole.
I ordered spaghetti. You ordered spaghetti. We'll go 300.
Yeah.
Put that's my foot pick. Down on that one. And Wild Beer Company Bliss. It's a funky apricot saison by an English beer company. And it's awesome.
All right. No, I am also going to go batch 300. I really like that beer, and I think it's highly drinkable as far as I don't get sick of it. A lot of beers in general, sometimes you can get sick of them. That one, I find I can always have a different flavor in it. And then I'm going to give you two answers for the other one. One, if you look at the old LG profile of Chris Helderman, you'll see Miller High Life Light. As my favorite outside beer, and that's what I would drink. But I will give you a craft option if we weren't going macro, and I will say Black Butte Porter. Black Butte Porter you can have literally in every situation, and it does extremely well. It's light enough that you can drink it in the summer, but yet it has enough flavor and robustness that you can have it with the heartiest of meals. So that's where I'm going to go there.
I like that beer. I don't know. Man, giving up hops, though, for life. That's.
Oh, I'm not a hophead, though.
There are some hops.
I'm not a hophead.
Yeah, it's good. Personal preference. I'm going to go. I just have to go Greenskeeper. It's tried and true. I don't know how to not. I've got that in me now at this point. For the Land
literally,
Grant.
Literally, you're drinking it right now.
Literally, figuratively. It's in me.
And it's in
psychologically
you.
And physically right now. I'll also say there's a lot of Land Grant beers over the years that I would say, if I had to pick a one-time favorite, but just to have every single day, Greenskeeper, always.
Yeah.
And then I think if I was picking, I think I'd want something kind of that you can have a lot of. I mean, Walt and I were discussing together, just saying, I'm not just going to say a barley wine and be stuck with that. I mean... If that's all you're going to drink, you can always drink more of something sessionable. I'd probably go with a good Pilsner as well, but I think I'd want some hops in that, maybe something like Prima Pils from Victory, something along that thread. Doesn't have to be that one, but Pivo Pils is really good too. Just something, somewhere you can get hops, get a good clean malt, and you know, if I want more of it that day, I'll have two instead of one barley wine.
All right, so now we're answering it as if we had two beers, one a Land Grant, one not a Land Grant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mine are vastly
different. Because if you're just picking one, I don't know. In my mind, I was picking one that I didn't think I was going to get sick of, was sessionable enough, and didn't go too far in any one direction flavor-wise. But if you can pick two, it changes things. I'd probably go with something hoppy and then something dark, so... From Land Grant, I'd do an IPA.
Got two to choose from.
I mean, Stiff Arm is so good right now.
You're a Stiff Arm
guy. I'm a Stiff
now.
Arm freak at the moment.
Made the switch.
It's really good. So, like, today I'm going to go Stiff Arm. And then I would go something dark. There was a beer a few years ago by McKellar, I believe. It was a brunch stout, like coffee brunch stout. It was like oatmeal coffee stout brewed with that super fancy coffee that's been like digested by squirrels or whatever the fuck it is.
Starbucks, is that what you're...
Or whatever the heck it is. I don't know, but it was delicious. Super rich, but not super heavy. Delicious dark beer. So that's what I would go with. I should probably look up the name of it if it's going to be my one and only beer. But
okay, then. That's an answer. I would say if there's no sort of impediments to this, if anyone's ever had Bass Pale Ale on cask, it is a fresh on the cask. It's
I didn't even think that one.
I've never had it on cask, but I have poured it on my popcorn before from a keg and had nice buttery popcorn.
It's not like that.
Thank God.
So if you do that and then you do some of our Nitro Irish Stout, you've got a dark and a light beer, and hey, you've got yourself a black and tan.
There you go. I like that.
Well, that's cheating. You get three beers. That's good. It's good thinking.
I feel vindicated. I looked it up on Rate Beer. It's 100 over 100.
Oh,
Brunch
nice.
Weasel, Oatmeal Stout.
You're a winner.
Imperial Oatmeal Stout.
As far as my non-land-grant beer that I get to have, I'm going to get a little ritzy with my choices, and I'm going to say Russian River Supplication. That Ooh. Is by far my favorite beer that I've ever tried. It's great. I have two bottles of it that are just sitting in my basement right now just begging me to open, and I'm holding off because it's even better when it's aged. And then I think I'm going to have to go with Stiff Arm, which is kind of odd for me, but I think that's where I'm going to go. I think those two would take care of all my needs.
Red means go.
That's right.
I think because I want my dark beer to be Deep Search, I'm going to have to switch out breweries on the other, and still, I just want something sessionable and hoppy. So could be pale ale, could be hoppy pilsner.
Okay, which one?
Which one are you doing?
I'm just
You're on the spot here, man.
I'll stick with that Pivo Primo, whichever. Sierra Nevada Pale Ale would be fine, too. I think just something has got...
Are we going to settle on one, or are we just going to start naming all the beers?
You have to pick one beer, Mark. That's the question.
How about Oast? Get Seven Suns some love.
There you go. There.
How about it?
Very casual, making decisions.
And Mark
about
is locked
things
in
that are
for
the rest
of his
life.
This was a real... This is a real thing.
I've got to say, actually, yeah, I could spend the rest of my life thinking about this question. It's unanswerable for me.
Cool.
Got to answer the question.
Yeah. So thanks for sending the question, Kevin. McCabe.
Kevin, see you by euchre season, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Euchre season's coming up.
For all you listening, that's a good question. Got a lot of good thought, good answers. So more of those. I enjoy talking about that. Unless you hate my voice, and then, you know, don't send me any more of those, and I won't talk anymore.
Options.
All right. Is that a wrap?
That's a wrap. Thanks a lot, Kevin. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Betcha.
And thanks, Walt.
Yeah, it's a joy and my pleasure, of course.
And producer Julie down here in the Jesus Christ pose. Thank you.
Our Lord and Savior, Julie Keys.
Have a great week. Tip your bartenders.
Please.
Out. It's like you're falling through a dark tunnel.
Mystery Science.
Well played.